You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good Friday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Norman, Oklahoma. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Friday, March 14th, episode 3647, brought to you today by Kentucky Performance Products. Good morning, horse people.
It's Friday, and another weekend of riding is a few short hours away. Jamie and Glenn are here to help you make it through the day with some fun guests and some really bad ads. Enjoy the show.
Well, we do have a fun show planned for you today. Dr. William Taylor is going to join us to talk about his new book, Hoofbeats, How Horses Shaped Human History.
You got it, buddy.
Yes, or humanity. Well, it could be either. Plus, I was wrong. I need to apologize about something that I've been doing wrong on
God,
the show.
God, did that taste like vinegar saying that?
Especially with this particular topic. And we have some really bad ads all coming up in today's show. Jamie has a turnpike update, too, she's going to give us. Unfortunately, I have an appointment to get to this afternoon, so there'll be no auditor post-show. Guess what tomorrow is here in Ocala? It's a big weekend. I mean, a big weekend every weekend with WEC.
I did hear from my husband that the race car thing where they drive really fast and go through the city streets, that started yesterday. So was that it? Is it race cars?
In Ocala? No. I don't think we're having race cars in Ocala. But we do have the Budweiser Clydesdales are in
Formula
town.
Formula One. That's the one.
For Live Oak is going on. That's the largest driving competition, CDE, in the United States, where all the big boys come out to play at Chester Weber's, 4,000-acre farm right across the street from the World Equestrian Center. And draws 10 to 20,000 people every year. When the Clydesdales are there, it draws about 10,000 more.
Really?
Yeah, they come out for the Clydesdales for sure. So we'll be there tomorrow, and we had some listeners reach out that want to take us to lunch. So we're looking forward to that. That'll be happening tomorrow.
Now, if you are taking Glenn to lunch tomorrow, make him pay. Like, don't let him.
Hey, they already offered to pay. Too late.
No.
Too late. Hey, by the way, I spoke to some retailers this week, and, we're not going to get political here. I'm just going to say the facts. With the tariffs that are going back and forth between all the countries, it seems like, they said basically that prices on everything that's imported and a lot of goods for the horse world are imported are going to go up. So basically what the retailers I spoke to were saying, this is little ones and big ones, were saying the same thing, and that is if you plan on buying anything this year, whether it's anything of any substance that costs money, like blankets or saddles or
horses.
Expensive bridles, or we'll get to horses in a second, but expensive bridles, that kind of thing, they said buy them now. Don't wait. Get them like in the next couple of weeks. So anything you were planning on buying this year, if you were going to put it off till fall, if you can afford it now, buy it because it's just going to go up in price. So that was the one first thing. And then I got wondering about horses, especially in relationship to Canada. And I got to thinking, well, Canadians buy and sell horses from the United States and vice versa all the time. And Pollock Report answered our question yesterday. So on March the 4th, we enacted the 25% blanket tariff that's going to go into effect on April 2nd, maybe, if it doesn't get postponed again. And that does include live horses. So each time a horse is sold and crosses the border, you'll have to pay the 25% tariff. So let me go over this. If the horse is intended to be sold in the U.S. at auction or by private sale and was born in the U.S., it originated in the U.S., the tariff would not apply. So any horses that started here that I don't know if what that exactly means. I don't know if that means it ended up in Canada and it's coming back. There's no tariff.
What if it was conceived in Canada, crossed the border, dropped the foal, and then went back across the border?
I think there's a lot of questions here. It does say if the horse was born or originated in Canada, the tariff applies and must be paid upon entry to the U.S. So that's telling me if it's a U.S.-born horse, goes to Canada and comes back, there's no tariff.
But did it originate at conception, or did it originate when it hit the ground?
I don't know. I assume there's going to be forms for all this. I don't even know how you pay the bill. I don't know that they know how you pay the bill, to be honest. But it looks like there is going to be, if you have a Canadian horse, you're selling in the United States, there's going to be a tariff and vice versa. So who pays it? The buyer pays it, because the buyer, like when you're bringing goods into the country and you're at the customs window at the airport and they say, you know, do you have anything to declare? If you bought something over there that has to be declared and there's a tax to be paid, you pay the tax. So it's the same here. So there
so
you go.
So who do you pay it to? Do you write a check to Donald Trump, or do you write a check to the Canadian government? Do you write a check to the buyer? Do you write a check to the seller? Who? What? I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't either. So I just wanted to let you know what's going to happen. So I would say if you're going to buy a horse from Canada right now or vice versa, get it before April 2nd. So.
Okay, well, here's the deal, you guys. We already have determined that we're marching towards death, and now we're marching towards tariffs. So Basically, buy all the things right now. I mean, why not?
So we need to put on the front of the shirt, marching toward death, buy it now. And then on the back, marching toward tariffs, buy it now.
It's like two lines of clothing that we're going to design someday. It's going to be amazing.
We could have made a fortune with this, and here we are, just not doing it again.
Just handing off ideas for other people to make money.
All right, let's get to some happier things. And what could be happier than Auditor Hillary Borneman's birthday this weekend? Happy birthday to Hillary.
Well, a couple things. First of all, I just want to let you guys know that, not that you care, but I am going in my first cross-country derby tomorrow since my surgery. I mean, what could possibly go wrong? I've jumped once this week.
I was going to say, have you even jumped?
I popped him over some little verticals and stuff, and it was really cute. I did post a video, my Flyover Farm Facebook page, because I jumped the first jump. Here we go. I'm back in action. I cantered down to this little vertical. We jumped the jump beautifully, and my dog was on the other side, and my horse completely spooked sideways. And this is why equestrians have trust issues. So what could possibly go wrong? I'm going to go run cross country this weekend. It'll be fine. Everything's
What's
fine.
What's a cross country derby?
So first of all, Saturday you can go and you can practice the course, which is nice. It's like a cross country schooling. And then the derby is the coolest show because it is literally only cross country. Only cross country.
Oh, so you don't have to do the boring dressage or the annoying jumping?
Show up and you just run your cross country course. So I'm really excited to do that. I did it last fall with Ace. And so we're still going to do the baby stuff, but I'm super excited to take him out there. I'm going to take Ace. Now, here's the fun part. We're going to try to take Miles. Anna has never done a horse show before, and I'm really excited for her. So we signed up Miles. And so she's going to go on Saturday. And Miles, as you guys might have heard, is the spookiest Andalusian or horse in the history of the world. I don't know why. I mean, literally, I show him everything. He's just naturally very suspicious. So we're going to take him on Saturday.
So we're throwing Anna on the spooky horse?
Yeah. It'll be fine. It's fine. She's young. She's 16. She bounces.
She doesn't have a broken shoulder yet. So
we're going to send her out on Saturday. And the other thing that Miles doesn't really do, even though I am a horse trainer and I do this, the horse sometimes decides not to load. He had some past trauma. And I mean, sometimes loading is questionable. So we're going to take him, hope he loads, hope he travels well. I mean, he's only 2 miles down the road. And then hope he doesn't spook and run home. So that's hope number one. Hope number two is that he loads and goes home. So all of this is hinging on for day one. So then we move to day two, which we have to go back and do the actual course. And Anna's not doing any jumps. They actually have just a trail kind of course, like just go through the flags kind of course, which is what they're going to do. And if it doesn't go well on Saturday, bringing in and pinch hitting for Miles, it's Craigslist Carl.
Does Craigslist Carl jump?
No, he's not going to jump. It is a flagged course. They have like super, because Miles doesn't jump either. He's an Andalusian. He's not designed to do things like that.
So what do they do? Just run around?
They just follow the course, go along the course through the flags. It's like if you were going on a cross country course and there were no jumps, but only the numbers.
So it's like slalom skiing for horses.
You just go
between the flags.
Just go between the flags. So if a disaster occurs with Miles and he's not quite emotionally ready for something like that, then Craigslist Carl is pinch hitting on Sunday. So we'll see. Then, speaking of Craigslist Carl, Anna never has given a horse a soapy bath. She rode a lot, but there were lesson horses and she wasn't allowed to bathe them. So we had a beautiful day and she's like, I want to give Miles and Craigslist Carl a bath. Okay. And so soapy baths, we prepare. And Carl, I don't know how he's going to be with the hose. My God, the horse's hair feels like a Brillo pad because he's literally probably never had a bath in his entire life.
Well, we didn't do that in Swink,
Oklahoma. You don't need to bathe him. So we start hosing him off.
No vet care, no teeth, no hooves, no bathing. No.
No bathing, no nothing. So we start hosing him off and he ground tied like a boss the entire time and actually enjoyed it. And so she's hosing one side and I'm scrubbing the other and we switch back and forth. And I realize that there is a giant mass of smegma hanging off of his sheath. And I was like, oh, girl, I'm going to have to teach you some stuff. I was like, we're going to have to clean Carl's sheath. And she was like, what? I was like, yes, you have to. And I'm like explaining to the German child how to extract a horse's penis, take it out, find the bean, scrub inside, and it is nasty. I mean, there is like black tar coming. Like, he smells bad, right? He smells like smegma. So I put the gloves on and I'm like showing her how to do it. Okay. So I'm like, usually they want to kick your head off. So I'm like, hold his head over here. I'm going to start to get up in there with, give me the sponge. Let's go. We're going to do this. So I take my hand with that sponge with the glove on and I start to put it up by his sheath and I'm ready for hell. That horse starts curling his lip, turns his head sideways, lifts his inside hind leg in the air for me to go deeper, Glenn. The horse thought it was the greatest thing.
Another thing we don't do in Swing.
The history of the world to have somebody stick their arm up his wiener and extract a bean from the head of his wiener. Like, oh my God. I was like, we need wine. Like, we need wine and we need to candlelight. Like, he loved it. And so you take the little sponge and I was like, just scrubbing in front of the sheath. And he was like, oh my God. Yes. I was like, Anna, I promise you, it does not always happen like this. This is not normal. I swear to God. And I'm like, it is 20 years worth of smegma and nasty that came out of this horse. So not only did we bathe
Carl. Happy
breakfast,
everybody.
Yeah. You're welcome. Not only did we bathe him, we cleaned his sheath, and we learned that he really enjoyed it. And I will also tell you that Miles was completely the opposite because I'm like, well, he needs a bath, so let's do that too. No. Yeah, we're going to have to wait till he gets his teeth done. He was not as big a fan. But anyway, you're welcome. Happy breakfast, everybody.
Yeah, I have a serious question. Why are not all horse women lesbians? Because after...
Because it's so gross. It just makes you...
Yeah, exactly.
As a woman, when you are doing that, you just separate it and you make it almost medical. So like I use medical terminology. I'm like, Anna, you know what? I'm not going to do it on this show.
No, that's not. Let's move on.
I use very medical terminology just to make it like... As horse caring.
As detached as possible.
Yes. Detached and all about horse care and the cleanliness of the horse and why geldings require
okay,
this.
Okay, let's move on.
You ask. You kept me going. I'll keep going. Hey, good news. For those of us who own a share of my racehorse Improbable Luck, I'm super excited to announce he has his first race tomorrow. I'm so excited. Wow. It's time at 12:30 Central Time, and he's on post number one in the first race. Now, for those who have Improbable Luck, you do realize that it has been quite the journey of keeping him healthy and keeping him happy and keeping him sound. So he's been through some stuff, Glenn, and so they finally got him to the first race. Yay. They've entered him, and the fun part is that they're basically like, yeah, just so you guys know, he's on post number one. It's his first race. It's a maiden claiming race, but it's like $100,000 claimer. So they don't think he's going to get claimed. And he will not win is basically what they said. Like, Dewey Lewis likes to use races to achieve fitness and basically don't have any expectations whatsoever. So basically,
so you're not going to win $4 on this race.
I don't think $4 is coming my way. Plus, it's like, you know, not a big race. So improbable luck, just go start to finish and end healthy and happy and sound. Thank you.
Well, yeah, I got good news for you there, too. And then we have to get to our guest. According to the initial data analysis from 2024, it was the lowest rate of fatal injuries on racetracks since 2009. Wow. So they are improving. I think the things that they're doing are working. It's decreased 44% since 2009. So maybe with all the different things that they're doing with drugs and tracks and surfaces and all of that, and just being more aware, I think probably too.
AHISA is, I mean, I know there's a lot of people listening that are cussing it, but I mean, that's a huge
It's still a big number. Yeah, it's still a big
44% less. Wow.
It's still going the right direction. So unfortunately, I can't apologize yet because we have to get to our guest. I guess I'll have to do that later.
Oh, you've got a big apology coming. You're going to eat your words, my friend.
Kentucky Performance Products is with us, and then Dr. William Taylor.
Frequently Asked Questions, brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products. Is it necessary to feed additional fat or oil to my horse when I supplement with a natural vitamin E powder like Elevate? No, it is not necessary to provide additional fat or oil to your horse when supplementing with the natural vitamin E contained in Elevate Maintenance Powder. A typical horse will consume enough fat from their diet to support the absorption of fat-soluble vitamins. An exception to the rule would be a horse that is severely malnourished or one that has a medical condition that interferes with fat absorption. Most horse people don't consider hay and pasture as sources of dietary fat, but they are. For example, mixed grass pasture contains between 2 and 4% fat, depending on the variety of grass. Hays contain between 1.5 to 3% fat. If your horse is eating 15 pounds of hay, that diet is providing from 1/4 to 1/2 a pound of fat per day. You can learn more about Elevate and natural vitamin E at kppusa.com. Got questions about your feeding program? We can help. Email Karen at questions@kppusa.com.
Well, we have Dr. William Taylor with us. He did a book that is called Hoofbeats, How Horses Shaped Human History. And you all know that I'm a history nut, and we do history segments on the show all the time. Dr. Taylor, thanks for joining us.
Hey, it's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Now, what are you a doctor of?
That's a great question. Technically, I'm a doctor. I have a PhD in anthropology / archaeology. So really, my specialty is studying horse bones, and I have a kind of focus and specialization in looking at ancient skeletal remains from horses all over the ancient world and trying to say something interesting about their relationship with people.
Okay, I have to know, did you grow up a horse guy? Is that where the interest in horses came in, or at least dead horses from a long time ago?
So I have a pretty funny relationship with that question. You know, I grew up in Montana, and my grandfather was like a classic Montana cowboy. My dad still has all the kind of cowboy attitude, at least. But my dad's a lawyer, and I kind of grew up as the first generation in my immediate family that didn't spend time with horses. And so, but I was sort of living in the shadow of, you know, this big time Montana cowboy who my grandfather, who I really never met. And so we'd wear, you know, cowboy boots for fancy occasions and, you know, horse artwork on the wall and this sort of thing. So when I got into archaeology, my first experience with it actually took me to the other side of the world to a pretty active, some might say the most active, you know, horse culture in the world, in the steppes of Mongolia.
Yeah.
So as a very young scholar, I got to the experience of kind of studying horses in the ancient world. And at the same time, I started to connect with horses, you know, as a person in my own life. And so I've been, you know, I've been a horse guy now for, you know, a decade and a half, but I didn't grow up with it in many ways, trying to bridge the gap between, you know, the lack of horses in my life and their importance in my family's history is kind of how I got interested in and connected to the question.
Well, that's interesting. That is very interesting. So the book, tell us what were you trying to accomplish with the book? And then what did you end up with?
Yeah, you know, so people always want to know, you know, the broad strokes of the story of our relationship with some of our animals that are closest and most impactful in our lives today. And understanding and making sense out of archaeology can be a big challenge. You know, the further you go back into trying to understand the past, that you get past the limitations of things like historic records or artwork and that sort of thing. And so it struck me as I was, you know, kind of cutting my teeth on understanding horses through archaeological lens, that the narrative and the new scientific discoveries, you know, the different various bits of information that were out there, they no longer really made sense. There are a lot of pieces that just didn't really line up. And people have been uncovering one by one, you know, really new and important aspects of the story, but they hadn't yet quite been restitched together. And I think, you know, your listenership probably knows this, but not everyone necessarily does, which is that if you're going to tell a story about horses, it really has to truly be a global story. I mean, you can look at your horse equipment today in a place like Colorado, and you can find an influence from, you know, Spanish influence or even trace the thread back to Arabian or even Mongolian, you know, innovations and cultural achievements. And so in order to really explain, you know, what happened with people and horses in the past, in a way that makes sense, you really have to take a global focus. So my goal with the book was, hey, can we kind of take stock of what we've learned in the last 20 years of archaeological science with new technologies, new techniques, and new fieldwork all over the world? Can we kind of refresh and make this stuff fit together and into a coherent narrative? And can we do so in a way that is properly global in its perspective? So that was the goal. I think the other sort of hidden agenda that I had here is trying to just lay out the way that these things actually gave us the world that we're in certain ways. You know, what is sort of the footprint of our ancient relationship with horses in the world that we're in now? So, you know, those were kind of my secret goals for the book.
And I think us horse people know this, but I think non-horse people probably don't even think about it, is without horses, we would be in a different place today. We wouldn't, you know, it would be a different world, because horses shape the world.
And this is a real intuitive one for somebody who lives, you know, I'm living here on the Front Range between the Rocky Mountains and the Great Plains. And, you know, we have tough winters. You don't have to go more than a couple miles from my house to basically hit a prairie that will take you to the, you know, Mississippi River. And in some parts of the human story, this was like not necessarily like a central place to be. You know, the open prairies, the cold grasslands of the world, it's a place that a lot of us call home today. But our role in places like Denver or what have you, as like a place of connection, of centrality, of culture and power or importance, all these things really go back to our connection with horses and the, you know, who horses are as an animal. And working in Mongolia, you really get the same feeling. You know, you can walk through the empty steppes of Mongolia and encounter enormous ruined ancient cities, right? And excavations at those cities can pull up artifacts from ancient Egypt, Greece, and Rome, and China, and Persia, and all these incredible connective links across the ancient world. And so we're in a world where it's normal now to have something happen in one part of the continent and immediately be on our laps on the other side of the continent or even the other side of the world. And that level of connection is something that we really owe to horses and their impact on ancient people.
And am I wrong? I got to remember in the last couple of years through archaeology, they've proved that horses go back further in time, you know, as a horses and humans go back further in time than we thought. Am I right about that?
Yeah. So there's a few major things that have happened recently. On the one hand, new archaeological discoveries show, you know, basically that horses are one of the oldest animals, if not the oldest, where there's a scientifically established link between early human ancestors and horses as like a prey animal. And the dates could go back as far as like nearly 2 million years. That's when you start finding horses and human ancestors kind of occurring in the same fossil deposits. You know, you have incredible sites that show things like strategic hunting of horses, even using things like wooden spears, using horse bones for tools. Horses are the number one animal in ancient artwork by early Homo sapiens, so they're like the most commonly painted image on Paleolithic cave paintings and this sort of thing. And then on the other hand, as we've started to get things like ancient genomic data out of not just humans, but now animals, we've been able to trace the thread of horse domestication with a level of precision and focus that we were never able to before, just based on the things like the appearance of bones. And that story has shaken things up a little bit. It's shown us that in some, depending on which, you know, theory or narrative you believe, you know, that date might actually be a little younger than we expected, only maybe about 4,000 years ago or slightly before. And the picture that emerges out of that new timeline for domestication of horses kind of makes it a bit of a lightning strike in the ancient world, right? It means that the time between first evidence of that kind of use of horses for something like transport and their spread into Europe and China and India and even Africa was very, very speedy. And so those different threads have all been happening at the same time since the last time that like a real, you know, let's take stock of the whole picture book was written. And so yeah, there's a lot to catch up on. If you've been interested in reading horse history and archaeology books, but it's been a few years, you know, there's definitely some new discoveries in there that have shaken things up.
So what is the thing that surprised you the most doing this? As a you know, archaeologist, you know, and researcher, and yeah, as a horse person,
I think the thing that surprised me the most and has continued to kind of surprise me the most is that before I took on the project of the global horse story from the perspective of archaeology, there were swaths of the world that I did not appreciate the extent of or significance of their connection with the horse. And just to give you the one that's been probably the most striking to me, in addition to some, you know, some Pacific cultures and that sort of thing, for me, it's actually West Africa. You know, really diving into the archaeology of horse cultures in West Africa was an eye-opening experience to me, because I've been a student of history my whole life, you know, since I could read. And yet these were incredible, you know, horse empires, trade routes, militaries, societies, and art, and all sorts of tradition and culture, incredibly vibrant, rich traditions here that go back many, many centuries. And I had never so much as encountered it until I started doing some of the scholarship behind the book. And it's actually launched a new focus of our own research, you know, after the book here. My PhD student Olamide is now, you know, working in to apply more and more of these new research techniques to this incredible and very underexplored piece of the archaeological record.
Well, this is very cool. I mean, I love that you put this, and I read some reviews of the book and things, and it looks like you put it in terms that we would actually understand.
You know, that I think that was the biggest compliment that I got from the book. You know, I obviously tried to do a solid job here with the science, but as you listeners can probably, you know, tell from listening to me ramble for a few minutes here, you know, I'm not the most sophisticated ivory tower academic guy. And so when I wanted to write a book, I wanted to write a book that, you know, my friends and family would read, you know, and so I like to put in pretty pictures. I like to speak in ways that, you know, other intelligent folks without necessarily a lot of pretense might actually get something out of it. So hopefully that's that, you know, that is been a thing that folks have said about the book that I probably put the most pride in. So.
Well, it's Dr. William Taylor. The book is Hoofbeats, How Horses Shaped Human History. Is it the best place for them to go to your website to get it?
Yeah, you can go to williamttaylor.com. The book is available through Amazon. It's available through University of California Press if you, you know, are selective about where you buy your books. But, you know, it's available at almost any of your local bookstores. If it's not already there, you know, they can easily grab it in. So I like when folks support their local stores.
Well, we appreciate you being on. Thank you for doing this research. It fascinates me. I love the history stuff. And I can't wait to read it. It's available now, right? It's out.
It's out. It's available now. And wherever books are sold, I appreciate being on this podcast here, talking with you folks. And, you know, also ask folks, come check us out at the University of Colorado Museum. In a month or two, we'll have a new exhibit on the human horse story, and we're a free public museum. So
where is that?
We're here in Boulder, Colorado.
Okay, very good. So Boulder University of Colorado Museum. I didn't even know you had one. So there you go.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, and we'll put a link. It's williamttaylor.com. We'll put a link in the show notes. Thanks, Doc. We appreciate you being on.
As horse owners, we spend a lot of time on the road. Let U.S. Rider help keep you covered. Our equestrian motor plan offers fast, reliable, nationwide service from our highly trained roadside assistance team. 24/7 coverage for both you and your horse. Membership includes horse trailer servicing, towing, flat tire repair, even on dual wheels, battery assistance, and lockout service on any vehicle in your plan. We also have your equine companions covered with referrals for emergency vet services, farrier referrals, and emergency stabling assistance. Get peace of mind on the road for you and your horse. Join U.S. Rider today.
Well, I got to tell you, that would be Jennifer's dream job. She loves archaeology. She would have loved to have been an archaeologist. She, you know, she was into the horse thing and never went to school for it, but she loves all those shows on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. He's living her dream sure. Especially when you go to his website, there's like pictures of him riding in Egypt with the pyramids behind him. I mean, this dude has traveled the world thanks to horses and bones.
Yeah.
Like, dream job for Jennifer.
Yes.
Just leave me alone. Give me a shovel. I'm going to go dig up some bones. Okay. Bye.
And it takes the personalities like Jennifer's where she can focus, you know, on a little topic for hours, which you and I can't. You know, that would drive me insane, you know, with my little toothbrush in the ground.
Speaking, by the way, you owe everybody, all of us women mainly, an apology.
Well, I did an interview for a show that involved food the other day, and I thought, well, you know, I've propagated this stereotype more than anybody that horse women don't cook and their husbands do all the cooking. And I'm the one that's probably guilty of making that a thing. And I thought, well, let's do a survey with the auditors and find out. We had over 200 responses. And apparently I've been wrong for 15
Could you
years.
Tell how forcefully and angrily yes. I clicked? Yes. I do the majority of the cooking.
Yes.
Like, I punched that thing. I didn't know if that came through.
Well, I gave them four choices. I do the majority of the cooking, meaning the horse woman does the majority of the cooking. My spouse does the majority of the cooking. We split the cooking, or neither of us cooks, which I'm assuming they just eat out every night. I don't know. Or they have peanut butter jelly. I don't know. But the numbers were not what I expected. I expected them to be about 70% the spouse does the cooking and about 20% the wife. Well, I was wrong.
Way wrong.
It was 54% I do the majority of the cooking, meaning the horsewoman does the majority of the cooking. My spouse does the cooking 19%, way off what I thought. We split the cooking 26%. That was higher than I thought it would be, too, to be honest. And neither of us cooks at 1%. Those people are just skinny. They don't eat. So there you go. I was absolutely wrong, and I apologize to all the horse women out there, but I've been propagating that for 15 years.
Do you know
what
would happen if my spouse did the cooking?
You'd starve.
We would have eggs, pancakes, or cereal.
Steak.
Every night. Or he does have a smoker, yeah.
Bacon. Everything you don't eat, you would have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was wrong. And in the comments that were underneath this, which were a lot, it made it pretty clear that they do the cooking. So I'm just saying. I'm admitting it.
You're wrong. Thank you for saying that. Before we get to really bad ads, I got to give you an update on the Turnpike. So I went to, oh my God.
Although we talked about this the other day. For those that missed it, they're talking about putting a Turnpike through Jamie's farm. So
through my farm, yeah. Through my pasture.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just awful, shady, terrible political BS. I mean, it makes no sense. It's a disaster. So I think I told you that I was like having questions. And so I called the mayor of Norman.
Right.
And he
called
me back. And so I go to this, I'm like a community activist. Okay. Like I went to this meeting. And there was like 600 people in a gym. Have you seen the movie Field of Dreams where they're like protesting the book burning? And
yes.
I was like, yes, that
so
was
me. So people showed up. You weren't the only one.
There was like 600 people there. And all of the people who is called the Pike Off OTA. Okay. So it's like, that's the organization that has come together to stop the Turnpike. And so they did their speeches and everything. And at some point I look around and the mayor elect who I've talked to on the phone is not there. So I'm like, well, he needs to know what's going on here. So I stand up and I start taking pictures of all the people that are here. And remember, I saved his number because he told me to, and I saved it. And then I texted him and I was like, look at all the people that showed up. Just to like let him know that this is a thing. He texts me back 30 seconds later of a picture of the parking lot. And he's like, I'm almost in the building.
It was like, so crowded.
He couldn't find a parking space. So he was like, I'm coming. I'm late. I'm like, okay. So the mayor now knows who I am, or at least text back some annoying woman. Yes. Who's like, show up to this crap.
God, she's a pain in the ass, that Jamie woman.
She's the worst. So we go through this whole kind of thing. And Chad and I've realized that we are probably the youngest people in this room by 20 years.
Oh, I'm sure you are.
Nobody has a farm out here that hasn't had it for like generations. You know, it's like families have passed down the land out here. And I mean, I just have a little 18.5 acre parcel, but you know, it's mine and it's perfect and I love it. And we have developed and worked so hard for it. So I just had a question, like, you know, they did their speeches and everybody did the talks and then they took questions and I'm like, raise my hand. Of course, Chad just starts sinking in his chair. I have a question. And so they bring the microphone to me and I stand up and I guess what? I am not shy talking in front of 600 people. Like, it's not a problem.
Big surprise.
So I gave my little talk and I was like, and so what I've heard is that there's people like surveyors coming around and they come around with like a police officer and like, what do you do about that? And it was like, no, you say no. And like, I erupted this whole conversation into the whole thing. Like, and then people came up to me afterwards and they were like, oh my God, you're the horse girl. You're the one who rides horses by the street because my arena is right next to the road. They were like, you're fly over farm. And I was like, I'm like super famous on my street. Okay. Like everybody knows me. So I go through this whole thing and everybody's talking to me about it. And I was like, I mean, it was so cool.
You're
to
now
like
president
meet
of the committee.
Well, they were like, we need people that are in the direct path to join a lawsuit. Ooh. So if any, we need 10 to 12 families. And I was like, right here, I'm in.
Chad's trying to sneak out the back of the room.
To be fair, he's really upset about this too. So it's not like he's going easy, but I'm definitely a little more extra than he is because he's, you know, like a captain of airline. He can handle crisis, not like me. So I'm like, we're right here. We're in. So I sign up for, I am like joining a lawsuit against the government. Look at me. And the mayor was over there. So I was like, well, we need to go introduce ourselves to the mayor, honey. Mayor-elect. So we walk over and I was like, hi, I'm Jamie Jennings. And he was like, yes, thank you for the pictures. So I really appreciate it. I was on the way. I was in the parking lot. And he was like, and I said, this is my husband, Chad. He was like, oh, yeah, I spoke to your wife last week and all this blah, blah, blah. Well, go through this whole thing. And we're talking to the mayor-elect, who's just like, he's like 12 years old. I mean, he's a baby, but he is all on board with this turnpike thing. And he starts talking to Chad about it. My husband invites him to dinner. He's like, we should have you over for dinner one night. And the mayor-elect's like, that sounds wonderful. Well, we have your number. He's like, I've got your wife's number. We'll put it all together. So like, who's extra now? Okay. I didn't invite the mayor to dinner at my house, which I now have to cook.
You are now a political animal.
I am a month. I joined the, remember, I am on the Oklahoma Combined Training Association board, and now I'm in a lawsuit and friends with the mayor. I am a pillar of the community now. Now, I would also like.
Why am I finding this so funny?
I am a force to be reckoned with because you know me and you know this is so not me.
Neither one of us. We're about the two most unpolitical people you'll ever meet.
Well, you know what's funny is when people came up to me, they were like, you're the one with the horses. You're the one with the farm. Oh, you and your husband. This is so sad for you. I'm so sad for you because you and your husband have worked so hard and you're just brand new here. And I was like, been here like 6 years now. And then I'm like, oh, compared to you, you've been here for like 700 years.
And it makes a difference. You have what did you say, 15 acres or something?
Yeah, almost 20.
Okay, so when a highway comes through your property, it's the whole property.
Yeah.
When a highway comes through the property of the guy down the street there who has 3,000 acres and farms it, it's a different story.
Yeah.
You know, it affects them and they don't want it either, but you know, they're tearing your house down and your barn. So,
well, let me tell you something. First of all, what I did is I discovered that, and I did this about a year ago when Turnpike Talk started, and tell me how intelligent I am. Okay. So I Googled that there is a protected bat species in Oklahoma. There's like three of them that are protected. So Chad and I put bat boxes up like all over the property. So if they want to come through here, you can't come through here because we have protected bat species. So I put up all these bats and I put bat attractant.
Have they showed up?
So I just checking on that because you can't really tell and you climb and you look inside it and I don't know what kind of bat is what anyway. So we have these bat boxes. And so I Googled like, how do you know, like what type of environment do these bats live in? I told my husband that unfortunately we're going to have to upgrade our bat boxes and we're going to have to build a cave. So like most of the protected bat species,
digging a hole.
They live in caves. So we're going to have to make a cave somehow on the property. But I will tell you that I will be that crazy girl who's chained to a tree. You are not coming to mind. You're going to have to run me over. So pillar of the community, I'm now on the board for the Eventing Association, and I am also in a lawsuit and a community activist. So you're welcome.
Next, you'll be running for state rep, you know.
You know what? My hands just started sweating when you talk about that. Let's do one step at a time. One step at a time.
Well, you know what? I'm going to congratulate you for getting involved. You know, it's because there were thousands of people here that got involved that they're not making our farm into a highway. So, so did they have one other question? Did they say anything about time frame? Or did they have a goal in mind for building the highway?
So what's happening, if you're actually interested, is there's surveyors coming around to people's property and they bring a police officer.
Because you have to let them on, right?
Well, that's what my question was to the community. The answer is hell to the no.
It is
you don't have to let them on. And you don't. And so turns out the police officer that they're bringing with them, they hire like an off-duty police officer to ride around with them. And it makes you
Because they've been shot at so many times.
Well, no, I think it just makes you think that they have access, but they don't. So they said, if you let them in to survey your property, it's going to take them 30 minutes. If you say no, it's going to take them 4 months. So every time every single person says no, that's adding 4 months to it. So do the math. You know, if everybody says no, and so they sold signs. So I'm about to, my house is about to look like I'm a politician running for government here, because I just ordered all these signs, like people not allowed, you're not allowed surveyors, a pike off OTA, like all this, and stop the turnpike. I mean, we're going to paint the front of my property with signs saying no turnpike. Yeah. You're not supposed to let them, you don't have to let them on. And, well, and that was what, well, yeah. And so they said that the sheriff of Norman has been made aware of this. And if they're trying to get on your property, you call the sheriff and he will come out and he will move them if they won't leave. So I learned a lot.
Don't fool around with the old boys from Oklahoma.
I'm so upset. I'm so mad. And I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to, like I said, I just want to move out. I just want to be left alone. I want to like have my garden and I want to ride my horses and raise my chickens and be left alone.
Well, I do give you credit. By the way, those signs on every place out here that was going to have the turnpike, there were signs in every yard. So so good for you. I'm proud of you. I really
Thank
am.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And now we can be less proud because we have to do this.
If you ain't met one by now, you're bound to
see. Only they knew what you did for a living.
He says one thing and he means another, but hey, he can't help it. He's a horse.
All that credibility would be gone.
Yeah.
Well, it's a laissez
faire. I don't ever lead when I do a podcast. I don't tell anybody.
They tell a low down lie with a sincere stare. Horse trading. Well, if they're talking in circles and the deal ain't square, he's a master in the fine art of persuading. Horse trading.
That's right. It is time for Really Bad Ads, that time of the week when we have a little bit of fun with ads that are submitted by our listeners from Craigslist or Facebook. And we do give away prizes every month. And for last month and this month's prizes, we have a Kelly Hurd horseshoe necklace worth $99. You guys all know Kelly Hurd. You all know how popular their stuff is. It's all made in the United States. And we're going to, thanks.
It's every Christmas I get something from Kelly Hurd.
That's right. So you're going to be getting one of these very pretty horseshoe necklaces, one of the winners. And also I have a book, Horses, Humans, and Love by Tim Hayes. Tim Hayes' Horses, Humans, and Love explores how social behaviors of horses, particularly their herd dynamics, offer valuable insights into improving human relationships. So I'll be sending that out. The people who won the books last month, I wanted to let you know, I got all your addresses now, and we're going to be sending those out today. So you should be getting your books soon.
Get to the post office, Glenn.
I
Come
know.
On.
Well, it's easier now. The post office used to be the Cala post office, and whenever you went in there, you waited for half an hour to ship something. Now it's a little tiny post office with one person working. And there's nobody ever in there. So it's
okay.
Great. It's great. All right.
Government dollars well at work.
They're going to close that one, I guarantee you. Arizona sent this one in. Are you looking for a challenge? A real what WTF did I get myself into? And eventually, that was the most rewarding experience I've ever had challenge. Well, this 2014 solid black RPSI gelding. What's RPSI?
It's a warm blood.
Okay. Gelding might just be your Huckleberry.
I'm your Huckleberry.
He has a very strong personality and is the jerk of the pasture who pesters everyone. It's like Nigel. He is almost impossible to photograph because he won't stay away from you. He is cute, athletic mover who will make a killer eventer or jumper for the right person. I love it again. Here we are. He'll be good for you, not for me. And for the wrong person, he will chew you up and spit you out. Price to sell in the four figures, but the right person is of the greatest importance. Does that mean you'll sell for three figures to the right person? And no, this is not a great horse for your 13-year-old daughter, who is such a great rider, unless you hate your kid. PM for video. Read between the lines on that one. I can't ride this horse. It hates me. It's bit me. It's kicked me. But it'll be great for you.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be totally fine. What could possibly go wrong? You're going to be fine.
Yeah,
it's fine.
It's all good.
I do appreciate a lot of the kind of social media trend towards over-honesty. Which,
yes.
I mean, I like it. Yes. I like it. So you can decide whether you want this.
We have noticed that over the last couple of years. It has changed a bit in these ads.
And also, they get real in the ISO ads, like this one sent to us by Faye. Gently searching for a companion mini or pony. Must be made of stern stuff and have a bit of evilness. Love to fight, bite, kick, and race. If it's fat and needs to be on a dry lot, even better. Must be able to be handled for farrier and vet geldings only. Tiny evil being will be providing companionship and be a chaos agent partner duties to our dirt merchant, EMS positive, Prince of Darkness, large pony, Jupiter. There's a picture of Jupiter. Jupiter's really cute.
Jumps pick, really high, too.
Pick for proof of evil being. Jupiter has retired from sporting duty due to health issues. Home visits welcome, located in Comer, adoption, care, lease, or low money preferred. Okay, so basically they have an evil pony that lives on a dirt lot, and they're looking for an evil pony to keep him company that will live on a dirt lot.
Well, we just need to get Arizona's ad to this person, and we're good to go.
I mean, yeah, it's totally fine.
Yeah. Molly sent this one in from Grand Rapids Area Equestrians Facebook. Attention all horse whisperers and horsemanship gods. I've got one for you.
Oh, boy.
Excuse me. Flame, a 10-year-old quarter horse slash Morgan mix, stands 14, three hands, up to date on everything. He's pretty and, for the most part, decent on the ground. He has a sweet personality, great conformation, good mover, trailer's great, ties well, stands for the farrier, but he don't like riding. I wasted the last 3 years of my life getting thrown, ran off on, and trampled, and I am done. If you think you have the power to exercise this guy, give me a call and we'll discuss his demons.
I love how they actually didn't put exercise, they put exorcise.
I love the fact that all our ads are on a theme today.
It's a theme. The next one comes from Janelle. She sent it in from the Sandhill Areas Equestrians Facebook page.
North Carolina.
Oh, Lord. First sale, Southern Pines CT entry. Hey, friends, it's me, Thor. I was all set to rock Southern Pines, but then my mom called the vet. Rude. And now I'm on short VIP rest period. Something about making my back feel its best. So my entry is up for grabs. My mom says she'll cut you a deal that money so that money can go towards more joint. My mom says she'll cut you a deal so that the money can go towards more German horse muffins and massages, which frankly seems like a much better investment. Contact her now and snag it before she starts reminding me how expensive I am, Thor.
Why are all Thors expensive? It's true.
Horse trial entries are expensive, and until if something happens, you're out the money unless there's a waiting list. So good for them for trying to sell it.
Yeah. You know, I didn't even know you could sell them. So that's good, too. I can't tell you how many when Jennifer was competing, how many times it poured down rain, there was flooding or whatever that we couldn't make the show. You just lose the money. I never understood that as a horse husband.
I would like the Ocala Horse Park to appreciate that I paid for entries three times and my horse went lame three times before the Ocala horse.
You don't get any of that back. It's just crazy.
Bye. Yeah, that was fun.
That was a hard one for me to swallow as a horse husband, is that they cancel the show and I don't get my money back. I didn't get that. Peggy sent this one in. This is from Florida Horse Connection. Oh my God. Okay, this is the worst horse trailer we have ever had. Scroll
that's
down.
Not a, that's not a horse. Oh my God, that's not anything.
Well, this is the ad. Must bring your own tires. Small 5-lug heavy duty 14-foot horse trailer can be enclosed. Good deck, 2-inch ball, no paperwork. Been on the property for a long time. Solid, no rust trailer.
There's no rust because there's no walls.
This is a piece of what was probably a homemade. I don't know what this is. It was a utility trailer that they put a wooden box on top.
It's a screened-in porch with no screen.
Yes, and it doesn't have any wheels. You have to bring your own, apparently. So you can't. This is the worst horse trailer we've ever seen.
I don't even understand what I'm looking at. Like, it's not a horse trailer. Like, it's like a camper that all the walls have fallen off of, and it's full of garbage. The tongue is sitting on the ground. There's no wheels at work, and I mean, this is.
How can they say
horse trailer? Oh, no.
They didn't ask a price. So, of course, it's in Florida. That's kind of the rust. Florida man of horse trailers right here.
It's no rust, Glenn, because there ain't no mud metal.
No.
Ain't no walls. Oh, God. That is indescribable. It's
that has
indescribable.
To be one of the
it's
worst.
A heap of garbage.
Who sent that in? I got to give her credit. Peggy, you win.
That is garbage. Allison sent the next one in, and this is the Fraser Valley Horse Owners Facebook page. Oh, another honest one. Spicy horse for sale. Loves vet visits. Good hay burner. Lady Ridin' Low KM. I don't know what that means. If you're looking for a free chiropractor visit, he will happily realign your back.
That's not what I was expecting.
No promises in the right direction. Boarding available at current location. 3,000 OBO. I know what I have.
Fraser Valley's in Canada, by the way. But I love that line. If you're looking for a free chiropractor visit, he will happily realign your back. I was not expecting
that. It was not the angle I thought that was going either.
That's very good. Danny sent it.
You know what? Get him now before the tariff kicks in. Yeah. Okay.
And it's on theme for today. Danny sent this one in. We got some new names today. 4-year-old quarter horse available. ... Super sweet and loving. Quick learner. Lives next to pigs, goats, and chickens. Good with a saddle and has been ridden 2 times and only did some crow hopping. Roughly 14 hands tall. Trailers and stands for farrier. Likes to be with other horses. Has the potential to be a jumper. Sailed over our 4-foot fence without a scratch. Without a rider, too. Make me an offer or willing to trade for a horse who prefers not to fly over our fences and has a healthy respect for fences.
Okay, let me read this. Okay. 4-year-old quarter horse available. Super sweet and loving. That means he's in your personal space.
Yes.
Okay, lives next to pig, goats, and chickens. Cool. Good with the saddle. And has been ridden 2 times. And only did some crow hopping. Okay, none of that's okay.
No.
Roughly 14 hands. Roughly, we can't really get close enough to measure him. Trailers and stands for farrier. Likes to be with other horses. Read herd bound. Yep. That means if you try to take him away, he's going to run back to the barn. Has the potential to be a jumper. Sailed over the 4-foot fence without a scratch. You are not keeping this horse in your property. So there you go. You had to break it down. Sorry.
Having owned one of those that wouldn't stay in fences, it's not good. It's not good.
Yeah. Danielle sent the next one in. 9-year-old mare, $2,300 in Spencer. I don't know where Spencer is, but we'll go with it. I got to put my glasses on. Hold on. I got to get closer. Got a kid. Broke all around. Horses easy to catch. Nice and sound. She was my son horses, but I'll just bought him another horses and for her nomo willing to take down the price for the right offer. How'd I do reading that? What? Hey, I read it as it's written.
I think the price should come down. The less punctuation, the less the price should be, is what I think.
I think that probably goes hand in hand, actually. You'll see any $25,000 horses with bad ads like that.
Cute horse, though, I got to say. Haley sent this one in. Awesome. Buckskin quarter horse gelding. He spelled it right. Yay. Al is a 12-year-old buckskin grade quarter horse gelding. He is very fast.
He runs away with you.
He likes to work and definitely has some pep. That's a second reference to speed.
Checks.
Al has a very competitive attitude and will not back down from a hard day's work. Third reference to speed. Stands great for the farrier, but can be a bit difficult to load once in a while. $3,000 to a good... God, we have a theme today.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But they were not as honest as the other ones. They were just hinting around at the fact.
Yes. Yes. And the hint said 3 times this horse will bolt with you. Yes.
You shouldn't be surprised. I basically told you. Yeah. Leah sent the next one in. Horses... Horse for sale, $900 or trade sheep. Okay. 1 white horse for sale with black dot.
Where's the dot?
I don't know. Well, I've never heard a horse described as it is 1 black dot. 1 red horse for sale, $1,200. Middle-aged, unknown breed. Open to trade for any farm animal that is smaller than a horse.
Do you think they bought the farm and the horses came with?
Oh, without a doubt. 100%. There, because the pictures are of the horses out in the field with no halters. You can't even hardly see the one with the dot because it's so far away.
Or grandma died. She had the horses. They inherited the property and the horses were there. And I they mean, don't any, know anything about horses. But they'll take some sheep or any other farm animal.
That's a thing. That's a thing. It happens. Oh my gosh. I'm trying to find this ad. I found one in my local Facebook page, and I've never seen one that wanted to trade what it wanted to trade. Dang it. I can't seem to find it. I've got too many politically active photos in my Facebook page. And so I'm losing it. I'll find it for next week.
Oh yeah. I'm sure there's a Facebook page for your group, isn't there? And that'll be an interesting one.
Pike off OTO, people, join it. Donate money. We need help. We have like chili cook-offs and crap.
Well, the nice thing is you can make vegetarian chili. So
exactly. Yeah, yeah. I'm involved. I'm in. When's the next one?
You'll be the president of that group before long. Well, we unfortunately don't have time for a post show, but I be safe today out there, the south and middle, all the way across up and down the country.
We have 60 to 70 mile an hour gusts that are coming in about 15 minutes.
Yeah, I know you guys are going to get it over the next couple of days. The weekend, the south is going to get hammered. There's tornado warnings everywhere. So be safe, everybody. And for the listeners that I'm going to meet tomorrow, see you at Live Oak.
Glenn will pay. Spay dinner, gout.
I'm paying to get in. I didn't even get press passes.
Why?
I know.
Common. Is it common?